I'm Anne Strange Champs. It's to the best of our knowledge, and today, an entire generation of young millennial women is choosing independence over marriage. They're creating a whole new chapter of life. 5 or 10 or even more years of living young, single, and free. What's happening and why? Rebecca Traister explains in a new book called All the Single Ladies.
One of the remarkable things I found while doing research for this book is that plenty of women have always found marriage unappealing, which I sort of didn't realize how much popular discourse there had been about it in the press throughout the 19th century and into the beginning of the 20th century. You know, in the book, I actually cite a 1904 column that is just so excruciatingly sharp on the inequities of marriage, written by somebody who called herself the Bachelor Maid. And it's from 1904, and it could be written any time now. I mean, it's
what does she
just
say?
So... Oh, you know, she talks about how she herself rejects marriage because as soon as, and she cites all these examples of married women she knows who are smart and passionate and have wonderful careers. She's talking mostly about teachers and scholars. And then as soon as they become somebody's wife, they are confined to the house and they never leave the house again. And they just have children and all of their passions and intellectual pursuits are subsumed by the duties of wifeliness and maternity. But even prior to that, I didn't realize Louisa May Alcott was this incredibly sharp critic of marriage.
It's so ironic because, you know, she wrote Little Women, in which all those girls get married. Though I have to say, the character that most girls like best, Jo March, the independent one, it was so disappointing when she gets married.
Well, I felt the same way. And in fact, my book opens with a sort of rumination on my childhood despair at the fact that all my beloved childhood heroines, that their stories end with marriage, including Laura Ingalls, including Jo March, including Anne Shirley. The stories got turned over in some cases to sort of these pallid follow-ups, you know, Jo's boys. And I mean, I didn't like the follow-ups to Little Women, and Anne Shirley had children, and you know,
yeah, there were there are always a few boring books afterwards where they have kids,
right,
and they've settled down, but they've lost all their spunk.
Right, and that's part of, okay, these are Bildungsroman, they're coming-of-age stories. And so it's partly structural that this is where their stories end, because they have come of age. But this is sort of the point of what marriage meant for women's lives outside of literature for a long time, that that marriage was their coming of age. It was the marker of adulthood. And of course, one of the realities of life was that for so many women, marriage was the only economic option. It was... because there weren't possibilities to support oneself if you were a woman that were very, you know, those possibilities weren't plentiful. Look at Jane Austen said, single women have a dreadful propensity for being poor. This is all too true. It is still all too true. Marriage was a necessity by many measures. If you wanted to have a sexual life that didn't make you, didn't put you in severe social danger, if you wanted to have a family, and if you wanted economic stability, men, those women who didn't marry often were left to depend on fathers or brothers or brothers-in-law, because there weren't possibilities for economic equality. So when you ask what's provoking, what drives our current expansion of the population of unmarried women, in part it's the possibility of economic stability.
Partly what you're saying is that women don't need marriage as
right.
much as they used to.
Right. They live in a world in which it is possible to be unmarried.
Right.
And that is pretty revolutionary.
I want to talk a little bit more about the history. I mean, one of the really interesting bits of history you uncovered has to do with the law of coverture, which really affected women's legal standing for most of American history, right, until the 20th century. But you should explain.
Right. Well, the notion of marital coverture actually is rooted in English common law. And basically, the idea coverture means that women's identities, their legal identities, were basically covered when they married. So you had a femme couverte is a married woman, and a femme seule is a single woman. And so it basically meant that once a woman married, her earnings legally then belong to her husband, her property belongs to her husband. There's a period that persisted for quite a while in which a woman could not testify on her own because she was presumed not to have her own independent legal identity. You see the remnants of it, of these attitudes anyway, if not the actual, the persistence of marital rape laws, you know, that it's only since the 1970s and into the 90s that states were overturning laws that basically permitted the forceful, you know, forced sex between a husband and a wife because the wife was sort of presumed to belong sexually to the husband. I mean, to be honest, we see it in practices around names. Why do women take their husbands' names? Their identities, they become merged. It's this idea that an identity has become merged and that identity is the husband's.
Mm-hmm.
And that has its roots in these ideas of marital coverture.
The other big surprise to me in some of the history you dug up is there's this speech you uncovered that Susan B. Anthony gave in like 1877 mm-hmm. that just sounds so contemporary. I hadn't heard it before.
Well, I couldn't believe this is another part of the history that when I came across it, I was kind of flabbergasted. When I first sold this book, I intended it to be about this contemporary generation. And then thinking that all of this was unprecedented. And then I started to do some of the historical research and realized, oh, my God, it's really not unprecedented. And there was this discourse in the press throughout the 18, even into the 18th century and certainly through the 19th century. And I found a reference to this speech that Susan B. Anthony gave called The Homes of Single Women in 1877. And I was like, oh, what's this? This sounds interesting. And she said in 1877, in woman's transition from the position of subject to sovereign, there must needs be an era of self-sustained, self-supported homes. As young women become educated in the industries of the world, thereby learning the sweetness of independent bread, it will be more and more impossible for them to accept the marriage limitation that husband and wife are one, and that one the husband. And
she was arguing that for real equality, women would need to stop marrying for a while.
Yes, she said we would need to have an epic of single women. And when I read that speech, I got chills because I thought, oh my God, this is...
You think
she
that's
foresaw.
The era we're living in?
We are living in it. I mean, it is what's happening. It's a, you know, and places that are not, you know, thinking about what Susan B. Anthony said in 1877. And, you know, and I don't know, does it last a decade? Is her vision, it's not clear, is her vision that we live through this epoch and then we equalize relations between the genders and then we, you know, can sort of
we go back to getting married?
Right. Or, you know, is it a brief retreat from it or is this a permanent state? You know, all of that. Who knows? Mm-hmm. This is, I don't know what's going to happen. But I do think that the untethering of the idea of female adulthood from the idea of wifeliness is absolutely shaking up our ideas of what it means to be an independent woman in the world and in the United States. And it is both pushing us closer to gender equality, but also revealing what we need to do as a nation in terms of our social policies and our attitudes to acknowledge a kind of gender equality and to acknowledge adult women as full human beings, whether they are married or not married.
All the single ladies, now put your hands up.
Rebecca Traister writes about women in politics, media, and entertainment. Her new book is called All the Single Ladies, Unmarried Women and the Rise of an Independent Nation.